The Milwaukee Journal sent a Milwaukee Brewers podcast joining you on a Monday morning where the Brewers have just capped off a 5-5 road trip, possibly one of the toughest road trips that just about anybody's going to face this year. They had to start in Chicago at Wrigley Field. They went to Philadelphia. They went to Atlanta. They took 3 of 4 from the Phillies, 1 of 3 from Atlanta. So again, after a 1-3 start in Wrigley Field, they wind up finishing 5-5 on the road trip. An impressive showing for the Milwaukee Brewers, capped with an extra innings victory on Sunday. Ben Gamel hits a home run in the top of the 10th inning. Brandon Woodruff delivers a massive performance, 8 innings of work, and the Brewers are able to leave Atlanta with at least one victory after an extra inning loss the night before. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. We're going to be joined here shortly by Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's going to get us caught up on everything that we need to know about this Brewers team at this stage. After now that they get to return home after a long trip away, the Cincinnati Reds are in town starting on Tuesday. A reminder that you can find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating or review. Let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter as well and give me some feedback at J.R. Radcliffe. That's J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.E. After Tom, I got a conversation with Eric Thames, first baseman, of course, for the Milwaukee Brewers. Caught up with him a while ago now. This was during their last homestand, so some of it might seem a little bit dated, although we didn't talk about, obviously, current games. We talked about things like his appearance on The Voice in Korea, the original version, or not The Voice, rather, The Masked Singer, which really caught on this past year in the United States. Before that, it was the Korean version of the show, and Eric Thames showed up on there. He went back to Korea, where, of course, he became quite the celebrity as a baseball player there. And he was able to get back on that show and be one of the celebrity guests on that show. So had to ask him about that, as well as some of his big moments in a Milwaukee Brewers uniform. This has been an interesting career for him in Milwaukee. Third year of his 3-year contract. He was signed from Korea, very non-traditional signing, and has had a pretty nice showing. He has backed up the contract he was given, and has been a key contributor at times. At times, he's been a guy who comes off the bench, but certainly an interesting signing for the Brewers. He's been a fun personality as well. So we'll talk to him. But first, let's talk to Mr. Tom Hodricourt. Tom, the biggest story from the past week is Keston Hira. The team called him up early in the week, got his first 2 hits on Tuesday night in his major league debut. He's had got his first major league home run, and that came on Sunday in a 3-2 victory in 10 innings. So that ended up being a big one. He's had a few multi-hit games. He's also had a few strikeouts. So give me your early impressions, your early, scouting report evaluation of Keston Hira's first week in the big leagues.
Well, you know, he's getting things clicked off the list that all newcomers want to get clicked off. First game, first hit, first homer, all that stuff. You know, he's had some good games, had some tough games. So that's just, welcome to the major leagues. I think it's impressive that he's played every game since he arrived. They're certainly not protecting him. They're putting him out there. He's been in some big spots. Home run on Sunday proved to be huge. And so, he obviously has a lot of offensive ability. And, the thing that's going to be interesting with him is just what happens with him if and when Travis Shaw comes back and goes back to third base.
So the other side of things, we talked about the rotation last week, but that's just continuing to really motor on. And I know they had a clunker with Yoli Chacin against Atlanta on Friday night, but Brandon Woodruff has been really, really good. And I know we sort of touched on him last week, but I mean, the guy went 8 innings on Sunday. He had only thrown 93 pitches. He almost could have gone the ninth. I mean, it made sense to bring Hader in at that point, but this guy is developing into an ace. I mean, the last four outings have been particularly good, but he's really been good for 5 or 6. I mean, I know we talk about Gio Gonzalez being sort of that rock in the rotation, but Brandon Woodruff is their best starting pitcher right now, isn't he?
Well, he certainly has been getting better and better every time out. And, if you go back and look at some of his early season outings, he would pitch well and have like one hiccup, one tough inning, one tough stretch of hitters. And that would, kind of taint his outing and skew his stats. Well, since he stopped doing that, since he stopped having those hiccups and just continue to plow through games, he's been very impressive. He throws way harder over a start than I thought he'd be able to do after pitching in relief last year. You know, last year when they pitched him in relief, his velocity went up because he could really let it rip for a couple of innings. But I thought he'd have to pace himself a little bit more as a starter to try to maintain his stuff. But, you know, he consistently sits in the high 90s with his fastball. He touched 99 on Sunday. So this is a guy with great stuff, great ability. You know, he was their minor league pitcher of the year a couple of years ago. And then this is the first time that he's ever been given the chance to stay in the rotation for any length of time. You know, last year he'd make a start, a couple starts, then he'd go down, then he'd come back, he'd pitch in relief. You know, they bounced him around so much he could never get his footing. This year they finally committed a rotation spot to him. He knows he's getting the ball every 5 days, and he's been very, very good at it. And this is a pitcher, you know, that to watch. You know, they've had trouble in general over the years of developing a pitcher, but this is a homegrown pitcher, and they think a lot of him. And while Corbin Burns, you know, they keeps having these home run hiccups like he did Friday night, and Freddy Peralta goes in and out of the rotation, Brandon Woodruff has been the keeper of that trio.
Yeah, let's talk more about those other two guys. Corbin Burns, obviously the home run has been his bugaboo all year. Then he gives up three of them in relief and in that clunker on Friday. Freddy Peralta now definitely looks like the odd man out with Chase Anderson returning to the rotation. We'll talk about Jimmy Nelson in a little bit. He's going to potentially be back with the team here within the next couple weeks. What do they do with Corbin and Freddie? Like, are they going to be on the major league roster, you think, the rest of the way, and they just take some lumps as they sort of try to get their confidence back, or are they at a point where the Brewers are going to have to think about giving them extended stays in the minor leagues to get them get them right again?
Well, it depends if they want to keep them stretched out as starting pitchers. You know, if they want to keep those alternatives open for them, it's going to be hard to do it at the major league level. So they're either going to have to just commit to bullpen or bust with them. And so it'll be interesting to see. There's going to be a lot of moving parts here in the pitching staff in the next coming weeks. You mentioned Jimmy Nelson. So let's just see what happens. You know, Chase Anderson got the start in Atlanta instead of Freddie, and Freddie did not come in behind him. It was not an opener situation. So and the other thing is, they have two off days this week, Monday and Thursday. So Council can do a lot of things with this rotation. He can skip guys. He can give guys extra rest. You know, they've been playing a schedule with very few off days for the last month. They've played 23 games in 24 days. And so only one off day basically in the last 4 weeks. And they're finally going to start getting some days off. And it's going to let them, you know, do stuff with their rotation. The good news is, it sounds like it might be some hard decisions because they have a lot of guys pitching well. It's really like, who would you skip right now? Maybe the Chase Anderson, Freddy Peralta slot. But I don't see them skipping Woodruff, Chacin, Gonzalez, or certainly not Zach Davies, who's been their best pitcher. So that's a pleasant problem to have if you have off days and you want to skip some guys and guys are pitching too good to skip.
Yeah, the landscape has certainly changed quite a bit here, and Jimmy Nelson is going to complicate it. Chase Anderson's pitched well as a starter, so it shouldn't really be automatic that he's the guy who would go out of the rotation. To if Jimmy Nelson were to theoretically come back, he's going to get one more rehab start. He did have a good start in San Antonio in his last outing, and now he'll get one more shot before the club has to really make a decision. What do they do here? Like, do they bring him up and ease him in as a reliever? I'm sure that's not what they want to do, and surely not what Jimmy wants to do. What happens with Jimmy Nelson? I feel like that's one of the more fascinating decisions this whole season.
Well, we'll find out. You know, the Cricket Council said in Atlanta over the weekend that Jimmy Nelson's going to make one more start Thursday for San Antonio. And then they're going to decide if they're going to put him in the rotation or not. He didn't say we're going to decide if he's going to join our team. He said we're going to decide if we're putting him in the rotation or not. So that means you either do or you don't. And I don't see, you know, they haven't gone through all of this with Jimmy Nelson to put him in the bullpen. I mean, that's That's, you know, there's never been any indication that that was part of the plan. So I think they're going to, if they judge him ready to compete, it's not just being healthy and, okay, he's done this long rehab and he deserves a chance to pitch in the major leagues. It's not that. No one's ever on scholarship in the major leagues. You have to be ready to contribute. So if they consider him ready to contribute, then I think he joins their rotation. And he's probably going to get a few starts to prove whether he belongs in there or not. They're not going to like give him one start, and if it doesn't go well, say, all right, the experiment's over. You know, he's worked hard to get back to this point. And so, and let's not forget that, you know, he was coming into his own before he blew his shoulder out in September of 2017. So he's worked too hard. They've committed too much time, energy, and money to him to just not give him a chance. So I'm guessing on Thursday, if he pitches even semi-effectively, he's going to join their rotation. And you would think it would be the Chase Anderson, Freddie Peralta spot. Because are you going to take Gio Gonzalez out? No. Are you going to take Brandon Woodruff out? No. Are you going to take Yoelis Chacin out? No. Are you going to take Zach Davies out? Certainly no. So it's a process of elimination there.
What a world where the Brewers just have too many good starting pitchers.
Yeah, exactly what fans were complaining about you know, 3 weeks ago, you know, when they wanted, you know, the pitching coaches, you know, drawn and quartered and hung in the public square and every pitcher released, you know. And you try to point out, and I certainly did, it's right there in my columns. Let's wait and see what happens. It's a long year. And right now, I think I read some of Todd Rosiak's copy today. He was covering the team in Atlanta. I think he wrote that in their last 16 starts, their ERA, the starting ERA is 1.5. Imagine that.
That is incredible, yes. And it will be a sight for sore eyes all the same when Jimmy Nelson is back. This long, long rehab. I know he's, I'm sure, thrilled to get back into the
it'll
big leagues.
It'll be one of the biggest stories, like human interest stories, in recent memory in the franchise. You know,
sure.
I mean, who compares to this being injured this long and waiting this long and come back? You know, maybe you might have to go all the way back to Teddy Higuera.
Yeah, maybe. Cal Eldred sort of had a long recovery period. Chris Capuano, I want to say, had three Tommy Johns, but
all right. Yeah.
But I don't think those were all with the Brewers necessarily. So yeah, this is crazy. Let's circle back to another one of your columns, to circle back to the Keston Hira conversation. How you wrote about him and kind of how the team took a chance on him, because he did have a little bit of an injury issue when they drafted him, even though he was considered the best, probably the best pure hitter in the draft. And they didn't necessarily know how he would project profile defensively. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that. And then on top of that, do you expect Keston Hira to stay here? That was kind of the original thought. They're going to bring him up for him to stay here. But if Travis Shaw gets healthy, I got to think Keston Hira is going to eventually get back down to AAA.
Well, we'll talk about the first thing first and then get to what's going to happen to him. So in 2017, the Brewers thought that Keston Hira was the best hitter in the draft. The interesting thing was he had not played in the field that whole year, that whole junior year at Cal Irvine, because he had a partial tear of the ulnar collateral ligament in his throwing elbow. So he wisely decided to at least protect his draft status as an offensive player by not playing in the field, and then they'd worry about the elbow later. Well, the Brewers had access to some medicals, but not enough to know that his elbow was either going to need surgery or not need surgery. He had got a PRP injection, which is a plasma-enriched platelet injection, which is sort of the last gasp for athletes to avoid Tommy John. And so the Brewers went ahead and drafted him with a ninth pick, a very high pick in the draft, and were thrilled that he was still on the board when they picked ninth, and couldn't wait to call his name. And then, as it turned out, when they did their medicals on him, their MRIs and stuff like that, that UCL partial tear had healed, that PRP injection had worked. And they still were very cautious with him. They let him DH a lot in that first pro year, then slowly worked him into playing in the field. And they had a very, very precise and deliberate schedule to return him to playing second base regularly. And then it got to the point where over the last year or so, it was no longer a factor, and everyone was confident that he'd be fine in the field. And in the meantime, he just kept tearing it up offensively, by the way. So now he came up, first position player from the 2017 draft, less than 2 years after he was picked. And he came up, the opportunity arose with Travis Shaw going on the injured list with a wrist injury. And, conveniently, Shaw had been in the season-long slump, so sort of needed a timeout anyway. So he'll go on minor league rehab sometime in the coming week. And then let's see how long they keep him down there. A position player can stay down 20 games. I don't see him staying down that long. But they're going to certainly give him time to prove his wrist is okay and to try to rediscover his stroke. And once that happens, I see him going back to where they were, with Travis Shaw playing third and Mike Moustakas playing second. And I think Keston Hiro will go back down to the minor leagues and play down there so he can play regularly. Maybe they'll shock us and do something, different. I certainly don't think Shaw or Moustakas are going to sit on the bench. They could maybe move over and start playing some first base. But Aguilar's finally got himself going over there. So maybe they could shock us. These guys think out of the box a lot, an awful lot. But, there'll be a time where Keston Hiro comes up and stays up, but it might not be this time. And I think we'll find out in the next week or two.
Keston Hiro wasn't the only guy hitting his first major league home run this week. Jacob Nottingham turned the trick on Friday and actually kind of was at the forefront of almost a crazy comeback. The Brewers went down, I believe, 12-0 in that game. Ended up being 12-8. Even in a game Hernan Perez pitched, the Brewers wound up within four before ultimately bowing out. Jacob Nottingham is an interesting guy. I think most people feel that they are down on him a little bit because the trade for Chris Davis pretty clearly isn't going to favor the Brewers. Chris Davis has had a sensational career in Oakland, but Nottingham, still a premium position, a catcher. He's performed okay. I don't think anybody expects him to be an offensive juggernaut at any point in his career, but I know they like him defensively. Where do you see him fitting into the long-term picture? Because if Grandal isn't back next year, obviously there's going to be at least one opening for a catcher on the big league roster.
Yeah, they'll have to decide at some point whether they think Nottingham is good enough to be a number one catcher, or at least a co-catcher with another player, or if he's going to be the best he's going to do is be a backup. So they gave themselves a year to figure it out by signing Grandal to a one-year contract. And so they'll just have to re-examine their catching situation at the end of the year. The hope has been all along that Nottingham would be their catcher of the future, but he's taking a little longer to develop. He's a big guy, a big physical guy. Sometimes those guys come a little bit later. That's a tough position to learn. But to his credit, he's made himself, he's improved enough defensively where they can put him in major league games and think he'll be fine back there. So probably it'll depend on how much they think he'll hit as to where they project him for the future. But I don't know how they're going to find out that much this year, because unless something happens to Grandal, he's going to play at least 80% of the time.
Big picture, the Brewers just came off of this three-city road trip with a 5-5 record. They'll head back home with a 28-21 mark. They're a game and a half behind the Cubs. The Cubs won on Sunday night, but the Cardinals are really scuffling. They're just a game above 500. The Pirates haven't really made a move yet at 24-20. The Brewers have one of the better records in the National League, and they just played three of the best teams in the National League, and we're able to feel pretty good about it. At this point in the season, we're now, a couple weeks away here from June. How do you think the team is feeling about where they stand?
Well, probably pretty good. Look at the schedule they've played. Has anybody else in the Central Division played a schedule like the Brewers? They've played so many teams that are over 500 and so many teams that are in first place. And look at this trip they were just on, 10 games against the Cubs, the Phillies, and the Braves with no days off, all on the road. As I mentioned earlier, they've played 23 out of 24 days. So it's not just the quality of their opposition, but the lack of off days as well. So, I think that they probably feel pretty good about where they are. They're probably going to get a little bit of a blow this weekend in time off. But, this I just want, you know, they may have finished an onerous part of their schedule, but I don't think they're ever going to have a part of the schedule that we're going to consider easy, because if you look at their division, the team in last place, the Reds, are only 500. Everybody else is over 500. There's no other division that has anything close to that. There's no other. The Dodgers and the Diamondbacks are the only teams over 500 in the West. Then the Phillies and the Braves are the only teams over 500 in the East. I think the East was grossly overrated because the Mets and the Nationals don't look like they're going to, you know, be very good, or certainly not as good as people thought. The Marlins are just god awful, although they swept the Mets over the weekend.
I was just going to say the Mets just had a horror story weekend against the Marlins.
Yeah, let's see if Mickey Callaway's still the manager at the end of the day Monday. It's, you know, so there's no division in baseball that's as tough as the Brewers division. There's no other division in either league that has four teams over 500, and then the fourth and fifth team is barely under 500. So they don't have a tanking, terrible 300 win percentage team that everybody can beat up on. The team that's going to win the East is going to whoever beats the Marlins the most, because you know you get to play 19 times within your own division, and I just think we're going to say all year that there's an upcoming tough series. Any of these teams can beat you. The Brewers, you know, they have this short homestand against Cincinnati and Philadelphia, and then they go and play at Minnesota. Well, that didn't look like that was going to be a tough series at the start of the year. Now you look and the Twins are 30-16. I mean, nobody saw that coming.
Yeah, no doubt. And
then on to Pittsburgh, where the Brewers just never seem to play well, you know. So we'll see, but at least they're going to start getting some days off on their schedule. Now they've 23 out of 24, considering the teams they've been playing, is an awfully tough stretch. And for them to emerge from that really long slog through a bunch of tough teams and be seven games over 500, I don't think they're going to complain.
Yeah, it's honestly shades of 2018. This is because they didn't have the rainouts that a lot of teams had earlier in the season, so they've played a couple more games. I believe they played four more games than the Cubs, maybe five more than the Cubs at this point. So there's going to be stretches, especially since they just had this long stretch where they have days off and other teams don't, and you might see something like a little bit of a market correction as you get into the later stages of the season. Real quickly before I let you go, Josh Hader has now given up five home runs. He gave up the walk-off shot to Freddie Freeman in extras on Saturday night. He could have given up a sixth home run because Lorenzo Cain stole it on opening day, as a lot of people remember, to close down the game. Do you have any concern about where Josh Hader's at?
No, I don't. You know, you look at the guys that have hit the home runs off of him. You know, it is interesting that he's given up some to a couple of lefties, but look who the lefties have been, Cody Bellinger and Freddie Freeman. No, I mean, he's been throwing mostly fastballs, so if he doesn't hit his spot, it's not like he throws 100 miles. He's not Aroldis Chapman, JR. He throws 94-95, not 99-100. So if he misses his spot, it's a fastball that can be hit. And they're probably just sitting total fastballs now because he throws them over 80% of the time. He just has not mixed in that many sliders this year. That might be something that they'll have to change over time. But I want to say he's converted every save opportunity he's got, I believe. The loss he took Saturday night was not a save opportunity, right? He came in a tie game.
Right.
So, I don't think he's blown a save, you know. And they always use him against the toughest part of the lineups and for multiple innings, you know. Like a Friday night, he pitches a great ninth inning, then the very first batter in the 10th, it's a home run off of him. Well, a lot of guys, you know, most closers are not asked to get more than three outs.
And then he did it again on Sunday, six outs Sunday.
And I was going to say he comes back and not pitches one inning Sunday, but pitches two innings Sunday and struck out Freddie Freeman. So
yeah,
he remains one of the most incredible relief weapons in the league. And, you know, it's tough when they lose games that he pitches like they did on Saturday night and like they did twice against the Dodgers at Miller Park earlier this year, because they don't get to use him that much. And when they do, they don't want to lose. So it is a tough loss when he's the loser. But to come back Sunday and win, I thought Sunday's win was a very big win for the Brewers for many reasons. It sure sounds better to come home 5-5 on a tough trip than 4-6. And when you lose on extra inning game on Saturday and then come back on Sunday and win an extra inning game, on the road, you've done a really good job. And Corbin Burnes blew up Friday night, but you throw that performance out. And their pitching's been fantastic for weeks now. You know what? They lost that Saturday night game 4-3 in 10 innings. That wasn't a terrible pitch game. It was just not the offense. They needed to figure out how to hit with the bases loaded. Somebody needs to sit down with the hitters and remind them that when the bases are loaded, the pitcher's the guy in trouble.
Yeah, certainly there were a lot of opportunities missed against the Braves in particular. But the Brewers still come out 500, like we said, on the road trip, and they are back at Miller Park on Tuesday. He is Tom Hodricourt. He covers the Milwaukee Brewers for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can read everything he has to say at jsonline.com. Tom, thanks for joining us again this week. We'll catch you again real soon.
Okay, I got a book signing Wednesday night at Boswell Books on Downer, 7 o'clock. Be there, be square.
Yes, the Special Brew is finally shipping, right? People can finally get their hands on that book.
Yeah, the national nightmare of the printing era is over, and you can actually get the book now.
Awesome. Yes, the look back at the 2018 Milwaukee Brewers season, you can find that on Amazon. Find that, I'm sure, eventually around Milwaukee at Miller Park. Definitely you'll want to get your hands on that. All right, Tom, so I will be getting my autograph from you on Wednesday, and we'll chat again on the podcast perhaps this weekend.
Thanks, JR.
Thanks to Tom, we move now to my interview with Eric Thames, first baseman again for the Milwaukee Brewers. He's known for his build. He's known for his beard. He's known for his prodigious home runs from time to time, and he's hit some big ones, including a couple walk-offs, which we talked about this year. He's known for his work on The Masked Singer, at least the Korean version, the original version of that show, which is where I started our interview on the last homestand. Here is Mr. Eric Thames. All right, my guest is Brewers first baseman Eric Thames. Eric, I could talk about baseball all day, but I really want to talk about The Masked Singer first and foremost. You went back to Korea to appear on the Korean version of the show. I'm just curious how that happened. Like, what were the connections? Like, what brought you back there? How'd you get hooked up?
They reached out to my agent, and my agent, called me, asked if I was interested, and I said, why not? And I was bored at home in Vegas, so I figured it'd be a neat little experience. Yeah. So, did it, and had a blast.
The song selection, Isn't She Lovely, did you pour over that one, or is that just an obvious choice for you?
Yeah, we had about 5 different songs, and
okay.
He initially wanted me to do Bohemian Rhapsody, because that movie just came out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was not going to
That's a tough
TV
one.
And, yeah, I'd go on national TV and sing that, so chose Isn't She Lovely, is an easy song, easy harmony, so... It was like, more basic.
Yeah, are you a Stevie guy, or was it just the easiest song in the bunch?
Just one of those songs that kind of popped up and it kind of stuck.
Yeah.
Of course, I think anybody's a Stevie person. Sure. It's so easy to listen to and groove to.
How many people responded that they were surprised at how good a singer you were? I'm guessing most people knew that, though.
No, I've never sung in public before. Even like karaoke, I don't do that stuff. So I went to like a singing coach for about a month, just kind of get like, wow, to learn the ropes and stuff like that, so I don't embarrass myself. I went out there and I got a lot of messages from people saying stuff, but I mean, it was all encouraging stuff, so it made me feel good. It was nice.
And when did you become aware, I don't know the timeline, when it became clear that the United States version of the show was going to be a huge hit? That had to be all afterwards, right?
Yeah, I mean, the original show is the one in Korea, so January 1st was the first show for the United States version. So they, I think my show aired probably like a week and a half, 2 weeks later. I didn't know that it would be such a hit, and it is. I mean, everybody was watching that, and they're all shocked with T-Pain, and some of the guys and girls they bred on there, like, everybody was shocked, so... It's cool. It's a great concept, I feel.
Yeah, I think it is, too. How often do you go back to Korea? Do you get back there a lot?
I try to go once every offseason.
Okay, cool. Is that someplace you'd go back to live after your baseball career?
I don't know. Well, it depends. Like, you never know where life could take you, but... I just go to visit for a while, but as of right now, home is in Vegas.
Yeah, I think I've heard you say that it's tough there because, I mean, first of all, you're very recognizable, and that there aren't many boundaries, so it's hard to go out there. Was it an adjustment to come home and not have that happen?
I mean, it's always peaceful when people don't recognize you.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's one of those things, like, you know, it is what it is. It comes to the territory, so we've got to find a way to enjoy it.
I remember back when you signed the contract here that you gave an interview where you were surprised that the Brewers have gotten into the mix, that was not something that was on your radar, that this team wasn't something on your radar. Do I remember that right? Was it kind of a shock?
Well, it was just a matter of, like, the major league teams. I mean, sure. Like, I was planning on going to Japan maybe or staying in Korea. I had no idea the interest that was on the side of the pond, so... it was awesome. I mean, when I heard the Brewers, I knew some guys on the team at the time, and
yeah.
I knew, like, some guys in the clubhouse and everything, so I knew it'd be a great fit, and it turned out to be a great fit.
Was there something about your experience in Korea that you could really point to say that really helped me when I came back to the States? Yeah, you know, you hear stories about you being, like, not having much to do, so you're able to, like, watch more video. Is that accurate, or was it just playing more baseball, getting older in your career?
Just a matter of knowing that failure isn't an option. It's kind of like, you know, if I'm struggling, you know, it's all on me, so I need to, like, figure out what I'm doing wrong. I need to look at video to know, okay, maybe I'm dropping my back shoulder, my hands aren't getting to contact the right point, or stuff like that. So kind of like, you know, like adopting the motto of, like, finding a way.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, how it is now, like, you know, like even pinch hitting, like years past, like terrible pinch hitting.
Yeah.
But I found a way to kind of, like, get myself ready every at bat, and just, I mean, I feel like that's how, you know, you have to be if you want to win. You have to be able to kind of know life changes, life throws curveballs at you, and you have to be able to adapt to them.
You've had a bunch of big home runs here. There are two walk-offs I want to ask you about, what you remember about them. One was a couple years ago against San Diego, a walk-off shot here at Miller Park, obviously. That was a big emotional moment in the context of that season. What do you remember about that? What visuals really stick out to you?
Murray threw me a fastball, and I fouled it off, and I was looking, okay, what's he going to throw again? I think it was in a fastball down. And I was like, I'm just going to stay through this ball, whatever what pitch it is. If it's a curveball, whatever, I'm going to stay through it.
Yeah.
And the fastball got in on me a little bit, but I was able to kind of, like, power through the inside half and hit off the top of the wall. And I was like, oh, man, because I got it, but I didn't get it good.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, man, got under it. And it carried out. Yeah, I hit off the wall and bounced off. And that was, like, my first, like, walk-off homer. So that was a great feeling. That was a great memory. And then the one, obviously, the most memorable is the one against Colorado.
Yeah, last year.
Because it was a pivotal time for us, and, you know, we're battling to get that. The wild card at the time, and we're battling against them, so that was a huge win for us. I know that was a huge skid for them. It kind of eventually got them on that downward spiral, but it was a great feeling to hit a walk-off. I mean, it's like seeing the whole team, all the fans go nuts.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and that one, you were down to the last out, down a run. Like, that was big. A two-run homer, I think, that flipped the outcome, so that one's really crazy. WWE wrestling in general is something that I know is really big with you. Is that something you've been involved, you know, interested in since you were a little kid, or how did that become part of your life?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was really into it. But as of late, you know, I haven't really been too much into it. But all the events happen, like, when we're playing or stuff like that. So I have the app. I'm catching that sometimes. And when Braun comes in, I talk to him a little bit on social media, and whenever I see him in person. I have friends that are on, like, the indie circuit right now doing that thing. So yeah, it's definitely interesting, and just it's always entertaining, you know.
Yeah.
It's awesome seeing, like, being able to skate baseball.
So last thought, one of the storylines with you is that you've hit very well at Cincinnati against Cincinnati. Is that something that just – is there any explanation for that at all? You comfort a great American or something, or is that just a totally random series of data you can't really do anything with?
No, I feel like in 2017 I was seeing the ball really well against them, and then, like, 18, I didn't really play very much against them, and this year I haven't played very much against them as well. So, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's like if you play and you see a staff as often as you can, you have odds are better in your favor.
For sure.
So, I mean, the way I see it this year, I'm trying to, like, boost my career average against all these teams, you know? Like, I'm not really worried about who I kill, because you never know, because a team could completely just shut you out for a series, you know? You can own a pitcher, and then you face the next game, strike out four times.
Yeah,
you know, it's just the way baseball works. But for me, it's just a matter of, like, having quality at bats throughout the year against all the teams and getting on base, and the hits are going to come.
Yeah.
So,
all right, sir.
Boosting up those career numbers. That's it.
All right, man. Thank you so much. That's what we have for you today on the Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. Once again, find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Thanks to Tom Hodricourt for joining us. Thanks to Eric Thames. We're going to catch you again next week. Take care.